Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm Anna Sale, in for Brian Lehr. Bernard Carrick has a, shall we say, pretty full picture of the criminal justice system. He was an NYPD detective who ran the corrections department and ran the NYPD under Mayor Giuliani. But most recently, he served 3 years in federal prison for tax fraud and lying. He's trying to make the case now for sentencing reform, and he joins us now. Welcome to the Brian Lehr Show, Bernard Carrick.
Good morning, Anna.
So you've led a life of extremes, I would say. Your legal troubles started when you were being vetted to be President Bush's Homeland Security chief. And some people might lie low after the fall that you took, but here you are back in public. Why have you chosen to step out?
I don't think it's really about stepping out. It's letting people know what the system is like, that it's not really a benefit to society in many ways, as many people believe it is. It's devastating our economy. It's devastating young people unnecessarily. And I am not saying that people should not be sent to prison. Bad people that do bad things need to go to prison. They need to be held accountable. But there are hundreds of thousands of people around the country today that are in prison that could be, society could be better served if they had alternative sentences, if they were paying taxes, taking care of their families, taking care of their children, and not creating this economic burden on society itself. So it's not just the prison system, it's the overall criminal justice system itself that I think needs repaired.
This from the former commissioner of the NYPD. I saw your interview with Errol Lewis on New York One last night, and you said the whole mission of the criminal justice and prison system is misguided. That is a strong statement.
Well, I think the system itself contradicts the system contradicts itself, what it's supposed to do. The reality is, I was in this system for 30 years as a cop, as a detective, as a correction officer, as a warden of a facility, of a jail. I ran Rikers and I ran the NYPD. My assumption was that our tax dollars went for incarceration and rehabilitation of bad people. I was in prison with many, many people that weren't really bad people. They were people that made a mistake, some out of stupidity, some out of greed, some out of sheer ignorance and didn't even know they did what they did wound up being a crime. But the fact of the matter is many of those people didn't need to be in prison to pay for that mistake. And I think it creates an enormous burden on society. And you don't really know it. You don't see it. You don't feel it. You don't understand it until you're physically on the inside. And I thought I knew the system pretty well. I was extremely successful on revamping and creating a renaissance in Rikers Island, a 93% reduction in violence, a 50% reduction in overtime. People said it couldn't be done. I know how the system is supposed to work and what it's supposed to accomplish. And I've been extremely successful in fixing it. But when I got into the federal system, I saw things that I never saw from the outside.
Listeners, we want to take a call or two for Bernard Carrick about his new prison reform push. Do you have a question about sentencing reform and how the mission of the criminal justice system is best served? You can call us at 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. We already have one call in. Joe from the Bronx, what did you want to add?
Yes, good morning. The military-industrial prison system, which Bernard Carrick is a part of, or used to be part of, I don't know if he's sincere at this point, costs the taxpayers $800 billion a year. So just because he goes to jail and all these poor minorities are being thrown left and right for selling an ounce of marijuana and cocaine, is he really sincere or is he just trying to cover his tracks?
Joe, thanks for your question. So Bernard Carrick, how do you answer that question? Are you really sincere?
Yes, I'm really sincere. Listen, I've put people in prison. I put many people in prison. As a drug agent, I put people in prison for 10, 20, 30 years in some life. these were bad people that did bad things. They tried to kill me. They killed partners of mine, friends of mine, colleagues of mine. I seized millions of dollars in drug proceeds from them and tons of cocaine from the Cali cartel. These were bad guys. The problem is, as this man just alluded to, there are young men in prison, and I was with them, and I can say this for a fact. There are young men, 19, 20, 21 years old, that are in prison for possessing 5 grams of cocaine. Their sentences are 10 years, 20 years, and more because of some of the conspiracy laws. It's unjust. Those sentences in a state court would result, their sentences in a state court for the crimes they committed in the federal system would be a misdemeanor, would wind up in a probationary sentence. It would not destroy their lives or their families. And I never paid attention to it. I didn't understand the federal sentencing guidelines and the mandatory minimums. I didn't know how it worked. Bottom line is, I think it's wrong. It's unjust. It's too severe. It's draconian. And it should not be. The punishment must fit the crime. And many of the punishments in the federal system does not fit the crime, not to mention the collateral damage. And the collateral damage is, I don't give a damn if you're only sentenced to 6 months in prison, a year in prison. The fact of the matter is, you are a convicted felon for life, and that's a life sentence. It's a life sentence. It never goes away. So you are destroyed for the rest of your life for a mistake you made at 19 years old. If you never commit another crime, whatever you did at 19, forever, if you live to be 110, you're going to be a convicted felon, and you're going to have collateral punishment forever for the rest of your eternal life. It's wrong.
So, Bernard Carrick, that's something you can personally speak to. I want to ask you, what was prison like for you as the former NYPD commissioner? Did you come to these sort of realizations through personal relationships, through conversations over meals, or did people leave you alone?
Of course. Look, I was in a minimum security camp in Cumberland, Maryland. I was there for 3 years and 11 days. I was housed with 300 other men in 2 different units. I taught a class there, a life lessons class, over the period of the time I was there. Many of these men were in my class. I got to know them. I lived with them. I heard their stories. I got to know their families and their family circumstances. Look, some of these guys, you look at them and you say, you know, they're going to come back into the system. They're never going to get rehabilitated. You look at many of them, and you think, what are they doing here? Why was this necessary? Like I said, you have to be there. You have to see it for yourself. And I think one of our biggest problems in this country with sentencing reform, criminal justice reform, the American people, the general public, and our congressional leaders, they don't get it. They don't see it. If you don't see it, you don't understand it. And if you don't understand it, you don't care. You have no urge to fix it. But if they saw what I saw, if they lived the way I lived for the past 3 years and 11 days, I promise you there would be outrage and there would be change.
It's interesting to hear the way you talk about this, because I hear both the former cop in the way that you talk, by talking about the bad guys that need to be there, and then I hear you talking about the people who made a mistake. How do you think about that, and how do you think about redemption, going through that yourself, now out of prison?
Well, Anna, listen, and I talked about this on New York One last night. You have a young family, a guy that's trying to buy his first home for his wife and his upcoming baby, his forthcoming baby, his first home. And he enhances his income on a mortgage application. He winds up in prison for 18 months for mortgage fraud. I was with men like this. They lost their home. They lost the money they put into that home. They lost their job. And they are now a convicted felon. It was a mistake. It was wrong to do. But was prison necessary? I don't think so. A guy sells a whale's tooth on eBay, and he winds up in federal prison. Come on, they're commercial fishermen that caught too many fish. It's, you know, some of this stuff. And then, as your former caller just mentioned, you take these young black and Hispanic men out of Baltimore or D.C. or New York City, 19 years old, for some low-level, first-time drug offense, and they are now sentenced to 10 years or 15 years in prison. Well, they're going to get a new education. Whatever they were doing in the street, they're going to learn something new. And it's not has nothing to do with real-life education. They're going to learn how to steal, lie, cheat, manipulate, and gamble. That's what they're going to learn. Every societal value they had, you're going to suck it out of them, and you're going to institutionalize them. You're going to teach them how to live without respect and discipline. They're going to be taught a whole new institutional life. And then you're going to let them go back into society. Do you actually believe that's a benefit to us in society? If anybody does, you're completely delusional. Because, for one, you've reduced their ability to get a job by about 70 to 80%, a real job. And those young kids will tell you, as they told me to my face, I'm black, I'm a convicted felon, I don't give a damn if I get a master's degree, it's not going to help me. And you know what? Unfortunately, it's right.
And for you, how did prison change you? Did you emerge from prison feeling remorse, feeling changed?
Well, of course you're changed. I mean, you see things in a completely different light. You look at your family in a different light. You look at life in a different light. The deprivation of freedom is something that is profound. The deprivation of freedom is something that we as Americans do not understand. You know, I've had these conversations with people, and they say, well, you were in club fed. You were in, a country club prison. Oh, yeah? Well, go down to the Ritz-Carlton in Manhattan. Get one of those big bathrooms in that hotel and lock yourself in that bathroom for a year without your family, without seeing your kids, and you tell me how luxurious it is. Eat out of a microwave. Eat out of a Tupperware dish. Have somebody snatching food out of your plate. Live in an environment where you live on a constant daily basis worried about HIV or MRSA or staph infection. Don't tell me about damn country clubs and club fed, because it's nonsense.
And having emerged from prison, you talked about a felony conviction as a life sentence. What's life like? What are your work opportunities like? How's your social life changed having emerged from prison?
There are no work opportunities. This is for all the people out there that thinks that believe this is sort of a, you know, that they have this lock them up and throw away the key mentality. If it's difficult for me to find work, and it's difficult for me to get back on my feet, then what do you expect those young men and young women to do for these low-level drug crimes? They're doomed. They are doomed to failure. You got to get those kids educated, get them off the streets. If they violate the law and they do something, get them out of the courts, stick them in a military-type boot camp, get them the programs they need, get them life improvement skills, get them something that's going to help benefit them later on down the line. And most importantly, do something where you can dismiss that conviction. That federal felony conviction or state conviction, felony conviction, hanging over their head for life is a killer. It's a life sentence. And for many of these kids, it's a death sentence. And if we don't change that, it's unsustainable. You cannot continue to incarcerate people at the rates we have over the past 25 years. You can't.
You know, I have to ask you, the first caller asked the question about your sincerity as a prison reform activist. And you just mentioned that it's difficult to find work at this point. And your website lists that prison reform is something you can give a speech on for a fee. So I wonder if, have you been sort of embraced by the larger prison reform movement, or do they see you as sort of an outsider who's not to be trusted quite yet?
you know, I've been approached by a number of people. You know, there's an assumption out there that I'm getting paid for. I haven't gotten paid for any speech. I'm not getting paid for anything. This is something that I feel I have the authority and the ability to talk about. I think I can educate people in a way that others may not be able to, and it's something that I strongly believe in, and I'm going to continue to do it.
And what would be the first policy change that you're advocating for?
I think the mandatory minimums and the sentencing guidelines have to be revamped, repealed. I think you have to incentivize good time in prisons around the country to get these people out of the system faster. If they're good, if you go to prison and you're doing well and you're doing good, then get them out of the system. Don't keep them there for endless periods of time if they're nonviolent and if they're no threat to society. So those are just some of the things.
We're getting a lot of calls. Stormy in Brooklyn, what did you want to add to the conversation about the prison system?
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, there you are. Go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. So I'm just wondering, I think it's a double-edged sword because I think we need to be more proactive also in the beginning with some of our youth and, you know, noticing signs of when they are on a bad path and helping them not to make that mistake to even get them to that point. It's also, what do we do to help our youth after they've maybe gotten out to help them get the education or the things that they need to survive and the mistakes that people make when they leave, just helping them be more proactive in their life after leaving jail. Those are the things that I think we also need to think about, and I try to do with some of the youth that I work with.
Thanks for your call, Stormy. We got another call from Steve in Staten Island. This is a question for Bernard Carrick.
Yeah, hi, Bernard. I have a question. You, though your crime might have been bad, it's no worse than any other politician, and they get off scot-free. I'm wondering if you believe that what happened to you was the Republicans' powers that be to discredit your associate, Rudolph Giuliani, to prevent him from ever becoming a viable presidential candidate.
Steve, thanks for your call. Bernard Carrick, do you have a comment on that?
Yeah, it doesn't make any difference anymore. You know, people have various assumptions on why I was targeted and what happened to me. It's, at this point, it's behind me. I try to look forward instead of look behind me, and, you know, so be it. So, you know, right now I'm focused on the future. I'm focused on trying to help change the system. And your other caller was absolutely right. One, you've got to get these kids. You got to do more for them when you see them going down the wrong path. But most importantly, if they do something that's bad and you can get them before they go to prison, the problem is prison. Once they're in prison, they're doomed. If you can create programs to get them right from the court into some boot camp or into a military-style boot camp or into an educational center or into something where they learn respect and discipline, life improvement skills, and they're mandated to attend something that where they come out a better person, without going into that institutional environment, we're all going to be better off, because once they're in prison, it's just a training ground for thuggery and criminality. That's all it is. So they're doomed from that point on.
We'll have to leave it there. I've been speaking with Bernard Carrick about his post-prison cause, sentencing reform. Thank you so much for joining us, Bernard Carrick.
Anna, thank you.
Up next, we're going to talk about the Winter Olympics. Yesterday, we heard about the sorry state of the hotels in Sochi. But today, we'll talk with Mike Pesca about the reason everyone's there, the athletes, and ask you who you'll be following. Give us a call, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Who's your favorite athlete? Anyone you want to give a shout-out to? What's your favorite storyline in the Olympics this year? I'm Anna Sale, in for Brian Lehrer. We'll talk about that after the break.